So, would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. My name is Lauren Pritchard. I'm 23 years old, born and raised in Tennessee. I've traveled a lot. I've lived in quite a few different interesting places. I live in London now. I made a record in 2009/2010, and it came out in October in the United Kingdom. And in February in the United States, it's called Wasted in Jackson, and that's what we're chatting about.
Interview over. You've covered all my questions. Oh, my gosh. No, but we can dig a lot. I've got a few here. We can dig a lot deeper.
I think one of the things that people don't realize is how much I've traveled and had to move around. And it's very mentally taxing. And I'm getting ready to move apartments when I get back to London after this tour. In the U.S. And it'll be my 23rd apartment in 7.5 years. And I think at the end of the day, wherever I am playing my music is where home is. So I have come to terms with that, you know, because it's been the only constant, really.
What, 175 gigs so far this year? Is that a pretty accurate number?
More now, because basically that was the total from beginning of February 2010, basically till 5 days before Christmas. So,
right.
And that was not including any radio performances we did, and that doesn't even include the travel dates. That's just like the days where we knew we had a gig. We worked 365 days last year, basically. The only time I didn't work last year were the last week of the entire year.
In the case of a Lily or in the case of a Kate, I mean, we can name all, you know who these people I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're all, you know, female singers. They all play with bands or they all have done similar things. But I always catch them at this moment where somebody's reviewed their record and compared them to the person before them.
Right.
So here you are down this line with me. So are you already early on kind of saying, okay, can't you just listen to me and say, boy, she's good?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like I said, you know, people need to know what your influences are because they need to know something that they can recognize.
Do they really? Can't they just listen to something and say, wow, I like that?
I do think that that does happen. I totally do. But music is an influence. Music is like a good disease, you know, and it spreads because you can say this is what it's like or this isn't what it's like. This is how it makes me feel. This is what it makes me do. This is what happens when I hear it. And so I do think that's why people need to know what their influence is. It is extremely frustrating sometimes, but I mean, thankfully, the one thing that I will say is the people that people have told me I sound like, the other artists, women, that they say I remind them of, are people that I listen to, people that I like. So that is good. You know, I don't have people telling me something that I know totally is off the beaten path for me. You know, I love and I listen to Lily Allen. I love and I listen to Norah Jones. I love and I listen to Fiona Apple. You know, and these are women, Alanis Morissette, Janis Joplin, Carole King, Joni Mitchell, Dusty Springfield. Like, the fact that, like, there are 5 or 6 different magazines that have specifically outright said she's the next Dusty Springfield, like, blows my mind because that woman's a legend. So the fact that, you know, anyone would go that far or even to say that is a total honor. So it's a very complicated thing because it's an honor to me when someone says something like that, but you also do just hope that people don't just only think of you as that. I don't think that the Norah Jones comparison is correct because our music sounds nothing alike, but I think, I shouldn't say nothing alike, but it really isn't. Hers is very jazz and mine is very, like if I listen to my record and her record, to me they don't sound the
Yours
same.
Yours is rock.
And hers is jazz.
Right.
And so I think the reason why that comparison comes is because she sits and plays a piano and so do I. And that's where I think some of those comparisons come from. But, you know, for me,
a lot of people say Billy Joel sits and plays a piano. I mean, you know, a lot of people sit and play a piano.
The next the next record for me, I definitely do want to be more raw. I even want it to go even more in a rock direction. You know, bands like Led Zeppelin and Rolling Stone are the foundation of what I love about music. And to be able to try and capture some of that would be a dream come true. I don't want to stray too far from the sound I've already created, because it is me. Those are my songs, and that's totally who I am, you know. But there are certain elements of the raw sort of rock that I do want to bring in.
It's kind of interesting because you really did move to the UK for a producer.
You know, the way I saw it, I was 20, getting ready to turn 21. I saw no reason why I should restrict myself from basically. I've lived my life on the principle of always saying yes, because it might turn out to be not the perfect situation, but it will always lead to something else. If you say no, then nothing will happen. And that was, you know, how I saw that situation. And it was very similar to New York for me. You know, I moved to do this off-Broadway show. I had no idea what it was going to be like, but I had no money. I needed a job. And I loved the music, and I said yes.
But the result of saying yes has really opened doors that no one would get anywhere near if you kind of said, well, I'm not willing to try this.
Yeah. I mean, I just knew how much I loved Egg's music. I also knew how much I loved the other songs he'd written or co-written with artists. And I made two trips before I officially decided to move over. And we wrote half of the album in those two trips, and I just thought, I'll be an idiot if I don't see this through. I know I will regret it if I say no and if I don't take that huge step. And it was very hard. I was in a relationship with someone. I had been for 3 years. You know, we were in a bit of a rough spot anyway. He and I decided to call it. And that made it a very difficult situation, because I was going to another country. He moved to Los Angeles from New York, you know. It was a very hard situation, but at the end of the day, I am happy. He is happy. And we're still friends at the end of it, which brings me some comfort, too.
So that must feel kind of good that all these people, and of course, you know, that Questlove guy, it must be pretty amazing to you that this record of yours, I mean, look, you can hire people to be session musicians. You're on a label, you have a budget, you can do that kind of thing. But this is not the way it's happened for you, right? It's kind of a little, I don't use the word organic because it's like a dumb word, but it is sort of to an extent, right? It's grassroots, but look at the level of grassroots. I mean, come on, seriously.
Well, I say grassroots in a sense that it's still a growing project. It's still a building and continuing thing. And I hope that it always is, no matter what levels things might reach. You know, I want it to always have that nature of the root, which is why I say it is a grassroots project. But, you know, for me, I was just a girl who wanted to make a record. And I had these ideas about what I wanted, and I knew very specifically what I wanted. But at the end of the day, it was just this girl from Tennessee who wanted to make a record and had these ideas. And throughout the process, you know, you would sort of make suggestions here and there about people that you might really like, respect as musicians, artists, things you might hear and go, that'd be really cool. And then that was sort of how things happened. You know, with Ed, right? I had heard one of his songs because John Gallagher Jr., who I played opposite of in the show, is like a huge fan of Ed. Has been for years. That was how I heard of him and knew about him. Heard a couple of his songs, thought they were awesome. And Egg White's manager and Ed's manager are very good friends. And there were a few days in that first trip that I was over in UK, the second trip I made over there, where something happened. I'm not really sure, but I had a couple days that were supposed to be with Egg. They ended up having to get changed, and I had these open dates. Lizzie, which is Egg's manager, rang Jess and said, does Ed have any few days? Would he be up for hanging and meeting and writing with Lauren? And he was like, yeah, I'd totally love to, whatever. And the first song we wrote, we've written two songs. One of the songs is a song on the album. And the other song we wrote is called If the Devil Always Wins. And I remember it being one of the best days of my life. I turned up. He said, let's go. Let's have some lunch because we were both starving. So we went to the pub on the corner near his old house called North Pole. We sat, we had some lunch, and we just talked. And we ended up talking about where I was from and where he was from and how we grew up and what we did and what things were like. And we realized, you know, that we were two people raised in very different countries, but in very similar environments, in very conservative religious places. Now, our situations were different because I think he had very strict conservative parents, and my parents were very liberal, well, considerably to the rest of the people around us. We ended up just really talking about God and the devil and how we think they're probably, like, not on the same team, but there's definitely, it's like a game of football, and they're tossing the ball back and forth between each other all the time. And we ended up writing this really cool song that we both love. Like, it's equally one of our favorite songs. Like, just that it exists, just that it's out there. Not because it's some great hooky pop song or anything, but just because we love it. And we love it because it really does mean something to us, too. It's kind of a funny idea, you know. I'm trying to think what the line is. We'd be something. We'd be dying if the devil always wins. Because, you know, you sort of get drowned out. Anyway, I'm droning on. But the people like that, like Ed or Marcus, who I sat down with a cup of tea a week before we produced the song, and I barely had to explain to him what I wanted. He heard the demo of the song Ed and I did and just went, this is what I hear. And I was like, that was exactly what I was going to tell you that I wanted. You know, and you hear these bonds, you hear these things. Or like, you know, Questlove says he wants to put the drums on the track because he's heard the song and he thinks it's really cool. And he does a few takes in the studio and you hear it. And suddenly this song that you've written just totally comes alive. And the fact that these people even want to invest their time, the fact that Talib Kweli, like, sat down and wrote a rap verse to one of my songs. So, an artist who I have listened to and admired for a lot of my life, you know. It is very incredible. And it also, it is sort of, you know, it gives you a really nice little boost that these people that you love and admire so much do believe in what you're doing.
So the one thing you said no to was a brilliant thing to say no to. It wouldn't have been for 99%. Of the people in your position, however, right?
When that came up, it was in the middle of me negotiating my record deal. And I was like, okay, I have this opportunity over here on this side, which is the thing that I love to do more than anything in the world, which someone is going to allow me to do for at least the next couple of years under this circumstance. But I've already spent 2.5, nearly 3 years of my life not being able to do what I love because I was over here. Thing A is the thing I really love and want to do. Thing B is the thing that I do love, but it's not my one top of the top passion, but something that I can do and am skilled at and do love. It's not that I don't love it, but it's just a whole different thing. Spent 3 years of my life committing myself to that. Realized, I'm not giving up any more of my time for this thing that isn't the greatest love in my life, because thing A is the greatest love in my life. And if I push this away any longer, I might as well just make thing B what I do. And I don't want to do that because that isn't what I want to do. And a lot of people have heard about it. A lot of people ask me about it. And out of respect for the person who is the lead on the show, being a very, very dear friend of mine, and respect for the people who are also involved behind the scenes, who I also know and are very, very dear to me, I don't really talk about it because it wasn't like I didn't make a wrong decision, and she is the person who should be there.
You made your decision. You made a decision for you, not a wrong decision, right? Because there are no wrong if it's for you, there are no wrong decisions. Is what's right for you.
I've had people approach it to me.
Well, I'm sure. How could you possibly? How? Because even if you're on a major label, you could be dropped a year from now and be out trying it again.
But none of that mattered. None of that mattered. Because, you know, when people ask me that question, they weren't in my position. And they don't know how strongly I feel about what I do. So, it, you know, to be asked, how could you? And that was wrong. Well, you're not me. So you don't know. And the other thing too is that Leah should be there, is there, and is like rocking the world exactly as she should. And I am doing what I love, and she is doing what she loves. And that is serious. Do you know what I mean? You don't get that opportunity ever. And it actually brings me more joy to see the success of the show, see her success, see the amazing things she's accomplished, and see how happy she is, than like me ever being involved in the project.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.
This is excellent. I'm so excited.
Well, cool. I appreciate that.